One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
This podcast is part of the Dark Myths Collective. Visit darkmyths.org to discover more shows like this one. The darkness awaits.
It's about to be a fun ride. Follow along, watch as we slide. Paranormal just hit the lights. Goosebumps all through the night. Mix in just a little bit of twang. That girl sure can't do a thing. Together, hillbillies go insane. Laugh so hard it'll hurt your brain. Podcast you won't ever change. These two here, they got the recipe. Sat on back and listen in to some of our darkest mysteries, ain't?
Welcome to Hillbilly Horror Stories. And now here's your host, Jerry and Tracy Polly, and their dog Ninja.
Wouldn't it be great if babies came with instruction manuals? Introducing the groundbreaking video series, Being with Infants. Presented by world-renowned child specialist and Montessori teacher-trainer, Beverly Kovach. With hours of individual lessons and demonstrations on feeding, diapering, sleep, play, environment, and much more, Being with Infants is the perfect gift for any new parent. 5-star rated. Being with Infants. Now playing on Amazon Instant Video.
Hey everybody, and welcome to episode 96 of Hillbilly Horror Stories. I'm Jerry, and I'm joined by my beautiful co-host Tracy.
Hello everybody, hope you've had a great weekend.
This has been a really cool week of events.
It has been.
And it's all little bitty stuff, but it's little stuff that means a lot. Does that make sense?
Yeah, of course it does.
Of course, we want to start off by thanking all of our military and civil servants all over the world, no matter which country you represent and serve for.
Amen, brother.
Love you
guys. Sorry, I cut you off. Sorry. Gotta get my love you in there.
I wanted to, again, jump in here with the suicide prevention line here in the United States, 1-800-273-8255. And just a reminder that if you're feeling down, if you're feeling like you're just not worth it, hanging around anymore, talk to somebody. Mm-hmm. It's more times than not, that's something that you're going to get over really quick. You're thinking, you know, maybe about dwelling on something that maybe too long, or you're always going to be your worst critic. And trust me, there's people out there who love you and want to talk to you and want you around.
You just call out my name, 'cause you know wherever I am. That's all.
We're trying to prevent suicides. Maybe you misunderstood where we're trying to go.
Okay. Anyway, right. I just felt like singing it.
Fantastic.
Great.
Now, real quick, we want to go through our Patreon supporters for the week. Bumblebutt Podcast.
Bumblebutt Podcast. Boy, I love that name.
And Amy, I'm assuming it's him.
I bet it's him, because there's two M's.
I bet it's him.
Oh.
And Brianne Barr, whose name is spelled like Roseanne Barr, but preferably not the same kind of hijinks as Roseanne. Then you've got Nick and Rob from Brohio.
Love you guys.
And Jeff Danes, I saved for last. Why did I save Jeff Danes for last? Because not only is he a Patreon supporter.
That's awesome.
He also bought two tickets to Potter and Love and posted
on
our page.
Yes, wonderful.
So looking forward to seeing you in August in New Orleans.
Oh my gosh, we can't wait to meet you, hon.
We got, speaking of Patreon real quick before we get into the iTunes reviews, we were supposed to draw for a Patreon t-shirt winner last month, but we didn't because I totally lost track of it. So we went ahead and drew for two winners, and it doesn't have to be a t-shirt. I'll send you guys, just send me a message. I'm going to send you a message too, but I'll send you to the store and I'll let you pick out what you want, but it'll be up to a $25 value. So you can pick out, we've had people pick out bags and pick out, well, not shower curtains because that costs more than $25. but the winner for May is Tim Mays from Grand Rapids,
Yay,
Michigan.
Yay, Tim.
And the winner for June is Caitlin Huff.
Woohoo, Caitlin. And
Caitlin's in Kingsport, Tennessee.
Nice.
We've actually had a rash of people from Kingsport, Tennessee.
I was going to say, I don't have no rash. I don't know what you're talking about. Sounds like a little personal problem to me.
Either way. So let's jump in real quick to our iTunes reviews. We've got Corey Raley.
Thank you, Corey.
Shane Waters.
Thank you, love.
Shane, obviously, is the host of Out of the Shadows podcast.
Yes, we love Shane.
We will be doing a live show with.
I'm excited
July
about that.
28th in Indianapolis. So if you haven't gotten your tickets yet, we keep posting on our page. That's the place to find it. Mysterious Circumstances will be there as well. It's going to be a really cool event. We got, it looks like Alec P. 522, L.S. Turn, Captain Morgan.
I know him.
Steve O. in L.B., Shelley from Coburg, and RWTXRH.
You guys are amazing. Thank you so much for your very kind words. We love you guys so much, and just hope you keep them coming. It's a highlight of my day, believe it or not.
We're going to bounce back real quick to Patreon, because we just released a Patreon episode, and we do listener stories episode.
Mm-hmm.
And we had Emma from Nottingham, England.
Yes, it was so great.
And she told a story, and her story involved... I'll let you in on a little bit of it, but for those of you who haven't heard, but her story, part of it involved, she had a newborn baby, about 2 months old, and the baby was just being able to learn to turn over,
mm-hmm.
and she had seen a dark mist upstairs, like a, almost like a shadow figure, and then she went past it, grabbed the baby, took it downstairs, she put it on a changing table. And she said as she turned around basically to get a diaper, the baby turned over and fell off the changing table. But she said when this happened, it's almost like the baby floated down, almost like some unseen hands had grabbed the baby and kept it from just smacking on the concrete-style floor. And...
Wow, that's amazing.
So that was the fun part of the story, but she sent me a message and said that her daughter, who's now old enough to know what's going on, she's, you know, because I think this was, you know, 7-8 years ago.
Oh.
She listened to the story and her daughter was upset that she didn't mention her daughter by name. She just said the
Bless
baby.
Her heart. Oh, so, now she's a young lady.
Yeah, and so her name is Beth, and I told Emma that we would mention Beth on this episode to make up for her not mentioning her on the Patreon episode.
Hey, Beth. Thanks for listening, sweetheart.
So we have what I think is a... Oh, I got one more.
Okay.
This one just happened right before the show, so I...
Okay.
Rob Mulhern.
Oh, yeah.
He drew, or painted, I'm going to say, the most awesome picture for Hillbilly Horror Stories, but I posted it, I think, already on all of our social media, so you'll have to check it out. But it's actually got the back of Tracy and I. You can see the back of our heads and then the laptop. And it's got all these cool figures from shows that we've talked about in the past.
Yes, it's totally amazing.
All over it. And then it's, you know, it's got the Hillbilly Horror Stories written underneath of it that it's like made out of logs. And it's phenomenal.
We can't thank you enough for doing that. That stuff like that really hits home for me, I think. And that you took the time out to do that. And it's totally awesome. And I can't wait to get it.
Yeah, I can't wait either. It's really cool.
I'm putting
cool.
it in a frame.
And we will.
And we will. And just, I just wanted to say again, thank you so much for doing that. That's totally amazing.
Yeah, thank you so much, Rob. And we appreciate
you're
you being...
You're very talented, by the
yeah,
way.
Yeah, without a doubt. The picture is phenomenal.
Mm-hmm. You even got that little creek thing back in... Not a creek, but a big line in the back of Jerry's head.
Where it looks like a pack of hot dogs?
I wasn't going to say that, but you nailed it.
I'm losing weight, though. It used to look like a pack of hot dogs. Now it's more like a pack of Vienna sausages.
Baby weenies.
So it's getting better.
Oh, thank you again, honey. We appreciate you so much.
But we've got a really cool show for you tonight. This is one that it's been suggested probably since we started doing this thing 2 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And for whatever reason, just didn't feel the need to do it. And today, today.
Just hit him in the right mood, I guess.
So I'm not going to tell you exactly what it is. If most of you out there who really get into the paranormal will already know this place, and you'll probably get it before I tell you what it is. Tracy, on the other hand, probably still doesn't have a clue if I asked her right now.
No, I would not have a clue. And that's really, I guess that's sad, right?
No, it's not sad. Well, we talked about this earlier. It's not sad because I think that's what works for the show. And what it proves is Tracy is not really that much into the paranormal. She likes the stories. If somebody's telling her a story, she'll get into that particular story. But she's not going to seek out stories. She's not going to go to YouTube and look up any videos. If it's on flipping through the TV channels and it's one of these ghost stories or hauntings or something, she's not going to stop on that channel. She just don't. That's not her interest.
I'd be scared.
And for that reason, she doesn't know some of the biggest, I mean, Waverly, she knows because it's in our backyard. Bobby Mackey's in our backyard. You pretty much name any other place, she has no clue.
Nope.
Like if I asked you right now, what's the Stanley Hotel? Where's it at? Do you know?
You know, I should know that because we did a story on it.
We did do a story on it. Any idea?
I forgot.
It's in Colorado.
Colorado. Oh,
don't try to throw that in on the end and act like.
Dang it, you caught me.
So it's in, do you know what part of Colorado?
The biggest part ever.
Actually, no, it's in Estes, Colorado. Oh. And what is the Stanley Hotel famous for?
What? Are you putting me on the spot? This is, I feel ignorant.
Because I'm proving a point.
Well, you don't have to go no more. They know I'm dumb.
What is the Stanley Hotel? The Stanley Hotel is famous for one really big thing. What would it be? No, I'm not going to tell you.
Stanley Cup?
The Stanley Cup, which is hockey, and has nothing to do with paranormal.
Well, they might have been haunted cups.
The,
you don't know.
The Stanley Hotel was where Stephen King stayed, where he got the idea for The Shining.
I really did know that. So, when you put me on a spot, I can't do it.
But that's the whole point. The point is, she doesn't know about a lot of these things, and I think some of our listeners that we've been able to accrue in the almost 2 years we've done this, are people like her that maybe don't have that huge fascination, but they still enjoy the stories and enjoy the show.
Thank you for kind of saving me there.
Well, I mean, that is the entire point. You don't have to be a paranormal junkie, so to speak, to enjoy the show.
But you're like, it's like you said, I do enjoy them. Once we talk about them and stuff like that, I guess I just try to put them out of my brain because I want to go to bed at night and
Fair
sleep.
Enough.
You know what I'm saying? And you know how my mind works, 1,000 miles a minute. So I can be thinking about how come I didn't cook that for dinner to like, oh, my God, that guy like chopped his head off. And and then it just freaks my mind out.
So where's the St. Augustine Lighthouse at?
St. Augustine?
No.
Florida?
It was close, though.
Florida? No?
No, you've got that one.
I did get it?
Yeah, you did get that one. Okay.
Yeah, yo.
So we've mentioned on the show several times that some of the most haunted places are hospitals, prisons, and hotels.
Yeah, why can't they venture out a little bit?
Well, I mean, you get so many people that come through there, it just makes sense. Mm-hmm. If you got a house, you might have, even if that house is 100 years old, there might have been 50 tenants.
Yeah.
Well, you got that a night.
Oh, of course, in a hotel,
Even at a small hotel. Mm-hmm. And some hotels have 300-500 rooms, so. Mm-hmm.
That makes sense.
Yeah, so and same thing with the hospitals and prisons. There's so many people. And with the prisons, of course, you've got all the bad stuff that happens in the prisons that makes it even worse.
Yeah, but not even ghostly related.
Right.
Don't drop the soap.
Yeah. But the hospitals are the same type of way because you've got not just hospitals, you got a lot of death in there, but you also have like sanatoriums and sanitariums and all that to where you've got all kinds of other stuff going on, mistreatment of patients and asylums.
I can't handle that.
But hotels are a little bit different. They just have a lot of people going through, but a lot of people staying in hotels, there's a wide range of emotions. You've got people that could be on a vacation. You've got people that could be somewhat homeless, and that's the only place they have to stay.
Mm-hmm.
You could have people that are going through a nasty divorce or something.
Yeah.
Or somebody just had a fight with their spouse, and they need to go get a room. Or somebody whose house burnt down. So there's so many different reasons that you could be in a hotel. And we're going to focus on one of those hotels tonight. It's a hotel, but it's not just any hotel. It's listed, literally, as the most haunted hotel in America. It's in Eureka Springs, Arkansas. And most of you who are paranormal junkies have already figured out we're talking about the Crescent Hotel. The Crescent Hotel is, like I said, listed as the most haunted hotel in America. That's their website.
Oh, dude.
Their website is themosthauntedhotelinamerica.com. They embrace this.
Mm-hmm.
Is this hotel scary? Honestly, it's scary enough for a 2-hour ghost tour that's on the premises.
Yeah.
Think about that. We went on a tour at Waverly 2 hours.
Mm-hmm.
That's a lot to cover.
Mm-hmm.
They covered 2 hours at a hotel on their ghost tour. The tour covers at least 7 ghosts that haunt the hotel. We're going to get into some of them a little bit later. This tour gets 30,000 people come through a year.
Just for the tour?
Just for the tour.
Oh my gosh, that's great.
And they're charging like $23 a tour, so they're making some bank. That's about $600,000 just
that's
on
a weird
ghost tours.
Total $23.
Well, I can't.
You just
it.
Made it up?
No, I didn't. It's like $22.50, but children cost less.
Oh, gotcha. So, man, that's awesome. I'd love to go do that.
On Halloween weekend, they said they do 12 to 15 tours a day with 25 people in each tour.
That is insane.
One of the things they talk about on the tour is in 2005, Taps, you know, Ghost Hunters from the TV show, they came down and they caught a ghostly human image in the morgue. And they also talk about how nurses are seen pushing dead patients down the hallway. And I know what you're probably thinking right now. A morgue, nurses, what the hell's going on? We're talking about a hotel.
Yeah, that is a little weird.
Well, I guess we've got a lot of history to cover then, don't we?
I guess so.
So let's talk about Eureka Springs first. This is where it's built. Right now there's about 2,000 people who live in Eureka Springs, and then half of those people are artists.
No kidding.
Yeah, this is like a really artistic.
Yeah, but that's a lot very of shops small town.
And stuff. Yeah, it is. It's in the Ozark Mountains, and it was originally made famous for its healing springs.
Nice.
Thus the term Eureka Springs. When it was named it was because, you know, like
Eureka.
That's exactly right. Eureka was made big during the Gold Rush, so that's where Eureka really came up. Anyways, in 1956, there was a guy by the name of, he was a doctor by the name of Alva Jackson, and he came across one of the springs called Basin Springs. And the Native Americans in that area had known about these healing springs for years. That's mm-hmm. what they used it for. And supposedly, the spring somehow healed Jackson's eyes. I don't know what was wrong with him, but supposedly it healed him. So he started selling Jackson's eye water.
Jackson's eye water.
It's catchy.
Yeah, kind of.
So he then brought a friend up there by the name of Judge Saunders to try to heal a bum leg that he had, which mm-hmm. I don't think anything happened with it. But word got out about all this stuff, and on July 4th, 1879, Eureka Springs was officially founded.
Well, maybe it only works for eyes.
Maybe so.
Maybe you shouldn't have been so specific.
Thousands of people started to visit here because people wanted to be healed.
Mm-hmm.
And in 1881, it had sprang up to be the... I said sprang up.
You sure did.
It was the fourth largest city in Arkansas.
Wow.
So it went from being nothing to, in a short period of time, the fourth largest city in the state.
Wow.
In 1882, Eureka Springs Improvement Company was formed, and they decided they wanted to bring the railroad to the city, which would also help, and they wanted to develop amenities there for the growing area. Now, the former governor, by the name of General Powell Clayton, he headed up that company, and he used his ties with the railroad to have thousands of houses and commercial property buildings built in just a few years. Think about that. Thousands
years. I mean, I don't even know how that's possible.
Well, nearly 2,000 of those original buildings still exist today.
That's a bunch.
Yeah. So many exist that the entire town, I guess, is on the National Historic Register of Historic Places.
Well, good for them.
The whole town.
That's really cool.
But all good things must come to an end, and in the early 1900s, modern medicine started decreasing people's interest in the healing springs because they didn't have to go to the healing springs. They could just get medicine for a lot of the things that ailed them.
Yeah, but why wouldn't you rather go to the healing spring instead of pay outrageous prices for medicine?
Well, I'm pretty sure they didn't pay outrageous prices for medicine back then. Humana wasn't really a thing in the
early 1900s. Well, I know, but still.
So then the Great Depression hit, and that hurt the area even more. And after World War II, tourism picked back up. In the late 50s, Beaver Dam was built, and then there was Pea Ridge Battlefield was made into a national military park. Both of those things started bringing business back mm-hmm. to the area. Now, it's also a very religious area, and two other attractions of the religious nature brought a lot of publicity and tourism back to the area, Christ of the Ozark statue.
Oh,
in 1966, which you've seen that.
I have seen that, yes.
That's the replica, like when we're going to Gatlinburg, and kind of like the one in Middletown. Those are replicas
that is
of
beautiful.
What this, but this one is huge.
Huger than that?
Oh, yeah, this is huge. But that,
that is a beautiful thing to see, I'll tell you.
And then there's the Passions Play theme park, where it's religious-based, and it's got Jesus ascending to heaven. There's camel rides with chariots and stuff like that.
Oh, that's cool. That's really nice.
All right. So let's get into the hotel part itself. This beautiful palatial hotel was opened in 1886. It was built of native limestone, and, you know, we're... theories before about limestone and what they hold in. And so as we mentioned before, early 1900s, tourism kind of dried up. The hotel was starting to struggle now, and it needed to raise some extra money. So in 1908, it opened the Crescent College and Conservatory for Young Women.
Oh.
But it was only there during the, you know, off-season months. Uh-huh. So spring, fall, winter,
right. Just
they had the school. But in the summer, it was still a hotel. The Great Depression hit, and it killed tourism again, and it caused the hotel to close down in 1934. So it was vacant for a few years until it was bought in 1937 by a doctor, Norman Baker, and we use that term doctor very loosely, about as loose as Roseanne uses her Twitter account.
Uh-oh.
You see, Baker was a lot of things. He was a vaudeville actor. He was an inventor, a radio show host, and a station owner. And a self-made millionaire. He was a lot of things, including a liar and con artist.
Hey, whatever works. Yeah.
What he wasn't was a doctor.
Oh, well, that's not cool.
So let's learn about Baker, the man, before we learn about Baker, the doctor, or quack, as most people in the medical industry knew him to be. So and he was born in 1882 in Muscatine, Iowa. He was an inventor that actually came up with a style of calliope that was in huge demand for carnivals and circuses.
Mm-hmm.
So you know what a calliope is, right?
No.
You know circus music? The steam organ type thing?
Okay.
So he didn't invent the calliope, but it was a different type that was in high demand, and that's where he made most of his money. Plus, his family had money, so he had money already.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, he started a radio station, and in the late 20s and early 30s, he was like a Howard Stern-type shock jock. Way before there was any of that, he was the guy that was a rebel rouser on the radio. So he hears of an alleged cancer cure by a convicted medical swindler by the name of Harry Hoaxey.
Harry Hoaxey. Good old Harry.
That sounds bad all to begin with. So he goes down, he checks out, you know, hey, what's going on with this cancer cure you got? Which I could see why he was so excited about it, because all five test subjects died. So, obviously, he's onto something.
That's not how it's supposed to work,
yeah,
in case he didn't know.
But he was convinced enough where he brought this guy back to Muscatine. It's Muscatine, Iowa. And by April 1930, the Baker Institute of Muscatine was open. And what he did was he would get on the radio station and he would advertise that he had a cure for cancer. And there you go.
People just bought it.
Well, sure they did. Because, I mean...
You
were desperate. Now, what were these treatments? Well, he had injections of a mix of different common things that most people would have access to, like watermelon seed, clover, water, corn silk, and carbolic acid, which I'm not sure what carbolic acid is. But it apparently is pretty common. But he was basically just household products and foods... So then he would get on the air and call doctors educated fools and cutters and basically said that they were incapable of helping patients, but he could. He could help patients.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, this started rubbing people the wrong way, and the Journal of American Medical Association wrote an article calling him a quack.
Well, I mean, I know it's back in the day, but when there's something they could do about that, stopping him, I mean...
But we're getting to that.
Oh.
So Baker responded that this American Medical Association... was basically just trying to run him in the ground, that they offered him $1 million for the cure so they could just do away with it and people would be forced to come to them for operations.
Yeah.
And the American Medical Association said, absolutely not. That's none of that happened. And when it was all said and done, Baker turned around and sued the magazine, the journal, for liability, for being liable, and what do you call it, defamation of character.
Okay, well, I was going to say, why can't the magazine sue his butt? I mean, he's the one done it first, right?
Yep. So what ended up happening is, in May of 1930, the state of Iowa filed for an injunction against Baker, Hoxie, and three other people for practicing medicine without a license. Baker would have these big, huge outdoor events, like a Woodstock type deal, where people would come up and then he would sell them all his little medicines and stuff like that. And he was making a fortune. And they said that the Institute would bring in over $100,000 a month because the cure for cancer is expensive, you know.
Oh,
and keep in mind, this was like 1930 and it was bringing in $100,000 a month. So in 1931, they shut him and his radio station down.
Good.
And he moved to Mexico for a while. He had a clinic down there, and he got a radio station that was the most powerful radio station in North America. And in that way, it would reach to the U.S., a lot of parts to the U.S., but he couldn't be governed by the FCC because he was in Mexico.
That was kind of smart.
Yeah. In 1937, he found a town that was down and out on its luck, which was Eureka Springs, and he bought the Crescent Hotel and turned it into a fake cancer hospital. He made millions. People flocked to him hoping for a cure, but most of them died. Hundreds died, a matter of fact, during the 3 years that it was open. Here's an extra version of creepy, but this is what ended up getting him caught and put in jail. He would write letters to families, like when patients would die.
Mm-hmm.
He would write letters to their family so they wouldn't know they were dead.
Wait, what?
Yes.
Oh, you're kidding.
That way he would keep getting
payments. The money.
And at the same time, he would make it like this place was like, you know, some kind of a pleasure dome, and it's like the greatest thing in the earth. But in reality, it was a dump and people were treated bad.
And so nobody, like none of the family members came to visit or say,
I guess a lot of these people probably came from all over the place.
Aww,
so they weren't just that readily acceptable. So yeah, he would write these letters. In 1940, charges were filed and they ended up busting him on mail fraud. I don't know why, once again, they can't get him. I think the medical thing, he's given herbs and stuff, so that's really not medical. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
But
of all things, a mail fraud that he got busted on.
Well, I mean, that's like Al Capone ended up getting busted on tax evasion.
Yeah.
Out of all the people he killed you know, so I mean, they got to find loopholes somewhere.
That's so terrible.
So he spent between 1941 and 45 in prison in Leavenworth in
Kansas.
That's it? Yeah, what's his mail fraud? 4 years for mail fraud is pretty good. He died in 1958 in Miami, Florida. And depending on what article you read, some say cancer, which would be ironic.
Yeah, and that'd be karma, is what that would be.
And then others say that it was cirrhosis of the liver. So one of the two, but he died in 1958 for that. Baker was known for his love of purple.
Yay.
He was like Prince before Prince. He would wear white suits with purple shirts and lavender ties. He even had purple vehicles. And when he bought the hotel, he took all this, because this hotel had all this beautiful Victorian wallpaper. He took all this stuff out and painted everything like different shades of purple.
Oh, see now, inside. I love purple, but I would never do that.
This guy supposedly was handsome with wavy white hair and hypnotic eyes. Now, obviously, this is the time during the hotel that's resulted in the visions of the nurses pushing dead bodies down and, you know, in gurneys, and the reason there was a morgue, which we brought up earlier, in the basement. The original autopsy table is still there today. And there's also an area where he would keep body parts in jars with formaldehyde.
I don't know much about that. How long does that last?
It lasts a long time. You can put stuff in formaldehyde and it stays forever, pretty much. I don't know how long it stays in formaldejekyll. But in formaldehyde.
Nice.
So this basement area is where the ghost hunters from Taps caught that image that we talked about earlier.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of things associated with this area. So you could see how many different spirits might actually be trapped in this place from the horrible three-year period just from him. So in spring of 1946, the hotel was actually purchased by three men. In March 15, 1967, they still owned it, and there was a huge fire. Now, at this time, only one of the owners was still alive.
Oh.
And there's really not a whole lot about previous owners and stuff from 67 until 1997, and that's when Marty and Elise Roenick, and I'm probably pronouncing it wrong, but I think it's Roenick, they bought the hotel.
So how much of it burnt?
It said it burnt almost all the way to the ground, so I'm thinking mainly inside stuff, because the whole thing was built out of this limestone. That's not going to burn. But I'm thinking a lot of the stuff inside burned.
Okay.
But apparently it was restored back to the original stuff. So you go to 1997 when Marty and Elise Roenick buy the hotel. Staff started telling them, like, immediately and telling them ghost stories. And these stories went all the way back to the very initial construction of the hotel. They'd been told not to talk about it by previous owners because obviously they were afraid that they were going to scare tourists and potential stayers away.
Yeah.
Now, the Roenicks took a different approach. They decided they wanted to embrace the whole aspect of the haunting, and they hired two mediums. It was two guys. One of them's name was Keith Fugate, and the other one's name was Carol Heath, and they were both originally from San Francisco.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, now they're down in Arkansas, which is kind of odd. I don't know. Anyway, so they start doing some research and stuff and doing their little things that mediums do when they go through and kind of read the house. And their findings, along with numerous reports from decades, became the basis for what they use as the tour today. And originally, these two guys were the tour guides. And for whatever reason, they ended up going to just using it in-house. So now they have just their own tour guides instead of using the mediums. Carol Heath said that he discovered a portal to the other side for people who were on the same frequency. And the manager of the hotel at the time, now this was 2015 from this article that I read, but he said that it makes sense years later. It didn't really make a lot of sense right then. But at the time Carol Heath said it, they didn't really have anything to go on. He said now, though, he recognizes after years of having many people truly connect with the spirits at the Crescent Hotel that there's obvious something's going on. And it really kicked into high gear when the ghost tour manager by the name of Keith Scales came to him with a concern. Keith said that several people were growing faint and some would briefly pass out at the exact same point of the tour. And he didn't really have an explanation for it.
That's interesting.
So then Keith told Moyer, who was the manager, where the stop was. And he went out there and he said, okay. And Moyer said that was the exact same place that Carol Heath had said 10 years earlier where was a portal. So Keith decided to take this manager, Mr. Moyer, out and show him the exact spot. Just stand there just so there was no confusion. And the place is right outside the hotel's annex entrance. Now, what made it more chilling is that they realized right afterwards that where this portal is directly over the morgue. Where the morgue used to be.
God.
Moyer said that no one can confirm or deny that this is a portal in the Crescent. It's all part of the, you know, mystery and unexplained happenings in America's most haunted hotel.
Man.
Go ahead. No, you go ahead.
No, that's just creepy. I don't know how. I mean, I guess you have to be sensitive to know where that portal is, I guess.
Or just a different frequency. I guess that's that whole thing, like when people, what was that the other day, where people were, you know, that one thing was being said and one person heard one thing and one, you know, Laurel.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
You know, it's different people have different frequencies and hear things different. And I guess people sense things different.
Well,
So let's talk about some of the ghosts, because these are really some cool stories, even more cool than some of the other ghost type sightings. So staff members receive frequent reports from guests in their rooms. And in the hallways. Now, room 218, room 424 are two of the hot spots. 419 is another. Those three rooms, 218, 424, and 419, are the three most requested rooms because they're the three rooms that had the most activity in them. And they said that when you call to request a room there, if you want one of those three rooms, there sometimes can be weeks or months
before you get it.
So let's talk about 218, because that's the most famous of the three rooms. Several guests and employees have encountered strange sounds and weird feelings. door slammed shut, and some people have been shaken awake from their sleep. There was a salesman that stayed there one night, and he said when he was asleep that somebody basically grabbed his shoulder and they violently shook it back and forth until he woke up. He said as soon as he woke up, he heard footsteps kind of like hurrying across the floor, but there was nobody in his room.
So he, like, after he shook his shoulders, he'd say, "Hey, are you awake?"
Yeah, I don't guess so. People think that this might be a ghost by the name of Michael. And remember we said that these hauntings went all the way back to the construction.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Michael was a very young, attractive stonemason from Ireland who was working on the building. But he was also a huge flirt. And they said that while he was working on the top of the hotel, that he saw a woman that he thought was attractive, and he was trying to get her attention, and he fell.
Oh, that's not a good first... not a good statement to, you know... I mean, hey, bam.
And where
he just fell to the bottom of the hotel?
Nope, he fell right where room 218 is today. And that's why they think that may be him.
Oh. I bet that girl felt bad.
She may not have even known.
She may not have even realized it. That's a shame. For a good-looking guy to go to waste.
So anyway, like I said, he died right above where room 218 is now. So room 419 is known as Theodora's room. She was a cancer patient back during Dr. Baker's time there. And people report her fumbling for her keys at the outside of the door. So as you're there trying to sleep or watch TV or whatever, you can hear somebody fumbling for their keys. And that would be her. She also likes to tidy up the room. Like, so if you're kind of a slob and leave stuff laying around, she'll tidy it up for you. And she's even packed for guests before.
Well, that's cool. But why do they think that's her?
I don't know. I didn't see anything to say.
I mean, what's your keys got to do with anything?
I don't know. Maybe she was just clumsy. That's just like if somebody heard a klutz ghost tripping and falling, it would be like my sister. It could be her ghost.
Oh, that couldn't be a truer statement.
Other ghosts that you might see on time to time there is Dr. John Fremont Ellis. He was the hotel doctor back in the very early days when it first opened up during the Victorian period. And he's been seen spotted wearing a top hat and evening wear.
Aww.
He's a very nice dressed ghost.
Well, good for you.
You can also smell his pipe tobacco near the elevator.
Very cool. Only if it smells good.
Well, yeah.
And it could be annoying.
There's a little girl who was left unattended near the grand staircase on the fourth floor. And because there were very poor building codes back then and safety standards in the late 1800s, as you could imagine, she was able to get underneath the lower banister and fell to her death.
Oh.
She was 3 years old.
Oh, no.
People claim that you can see a blue orb. It's like a childlike blue orb. I don't know what a childlike blue orb is.
Huh.
But you can see that, and they think that's the little girl.
And bless her heart.
Let's jump back to room 218 real quick. Another story... And I thought this was really cool. From one of the hotel's former owners' wife used to stay in that room. And one night, she woke up and started screaming and ran out of the room because she said that there was blood splattered everywhere.
What?
And then the staff went up there and inspected, but there was absolutely nothing.
Like there was nothing?
Nothing. So they said that this could be maybe Michael from where he fell because he had landed. And maybe that had something to do with that. Or maybe this was one of that quack baker's operating rooms.
Mm.
But nobody really knows.
Yeah.
So, they know some of these rooms, they say, are so haunted that people in the middle of the night have left their room and went downstairs and slept in the lobby, like on one of those old Victorian couches or something, big uncomfortable couch, because they were so scared to sleep in a room.
Yeah, I could feel them. I would do that, too.
Let's jump to one of the other haunted rooms we talked about, 424. Nothing really specific to mention has happened there, but they've just got numerous... amounts of complaints from guests and staff about just weird feelings and things moving around in there. But nothing, big story to tell. But it's still one of the most common rooms for those kind of things. One of the other ghosts that people see, they say there's a distinguished-looking gentleman. He's got a beard, a mustache, and he's dressed in old-fashioned formal attire. Now, he's usually seen in the hotel lobby or in the bar. And they think he likes to hang around the bar because it's decorated in Victorian style, which is probably from the era that he looks like he's from. People claim to talk to him, but he just sits quietly and then vanishes. He just never responds. So he's a rude ghost.
That'd be cool, though, to see it.
Here's a cool story about him, though. One of the staff members said that there was one summer they were extra busy and they had two auditors, which are people who work the front desk, working. And one of them left the front desk to go get some water out of the bar after it was closed. Like, you can't get water somewhere else. You got to go to the bar to get water. Come on. Could explain the rest of the story. So anyway, he said there was some guy sitting on a bar stool when he got there just looking straight ahead. And he said the guy didn't say anything. And so he started talking to him, and the guy just ignored him.
And what is he saying? Bar's closed.
Yeah, I don't know.
Closing time. Last call.
I don't know. But the guy wasn't responding to him regardless, so he went back to the front desk to get his partner. And they both came back, you know, thinking this guy was just a drunk or something. Mm-hmm. So they both come back, and the guy's still sitting there
on the bar. Oh, my gosh.
And so they said, hey, he's not listening to us. To hell with it. We'll just leave him alone. They took four or five steps going back towards the lobby, and before they got out of the bar, they looked back over their shoulder, and the guy was gone. The bar stool was completely empty. And one of the guys decided that he was going to go look for him. So he goes looking around, and he's looking all over the whole lobby. He don't see anything. He walks over to the steps, and he looks up the stairs, and he sees the guy on the second floor landing looking down at him. And then he decides to walk up the steps, so he gets up the steps. Right before he got to the second floor, he said he felt something push him back down the stairs. You know, like just holding him back. Not
he's probably
him.
Aggravated. He done left the bar, like they said. Now they're following him up the daggone stairs.
Anyway, this guy said, he pretty much said, screw that, and then he went to go get the manager.
I like the manager. Oh.
Yeah, because you know all managers have the power over the paranormal. The power of bellhop tells you. In July of 1987, a guest said that she saw a nurse pushing a gurney down the hallway in the middle of the night. The nurse reached the wall and vanished. And then she later found out that several people had actually witnessed this exact same experience, and it was always reenacted the exact same way. So none of these people knew each other, but they all had the same story. Now, Baker, his apparition is believed to show itself in the old recreation room near the foot of the staircase that goes up to the first floor. People who have seen him says that he looks lost. They said that he starts out going one way, and then he goes, turns, and starts going the other way.
Aww.
So hopefully he's trapped here for all the bad shit that he did.
That's right. Yeah. So that's not an aw. That's a ha-ha.
Yeah, pretty much.
Okay, gotcha.
Well, they said this is a funny story. They said that they used to have this antique switchboard, and they had to have it removed because they were having so many problems. Now, here are the problems. In one of the summers, they would get calls from the recreation room, which was in the basement. Well, there was no one on the other end of this call because that room is unused and it's locked.
I was going to say, it probably don't even work anymore, does it?
No. And, well, I guess the switchboard did.
Oh.
So anyway, they would go get this call. They would go down and check it out, and they would always find that the phone was taken off the hook. But there was no way for anybody to get in here. There was only one key, and that was at the front desk. And that's the only way anybody could get in or out. So how these phones were getting taken off the hook and setting the thing off, nobody knew. So one night, after one of these calls, one of the members of the staff said he went down there, but the phone was on the hook. But he felt a very strange presence, and he just felt like something was in the room with him. And he said he just really wanted to get the hell out of there. So he locked the door and went back upstairs, but the switchboard went off again 5 minutes later, showing it was coming from that room. But this time he said he did not go and check it out.
I'm sure.
He said that's the end of it. And we're going to end with, we're not really ending, but we're going to kind of wrap this story up with a picture from room 202. Nobody knows who took this picture or where it came from or why they took it, but it's got a misty figure slouching into the closet of the room, and supposedly the only other person in the room was the photographer.
Ooh, can't wait to see that.
Me either. I hope I can find it. Oh. I haven't bothered to look for it yet.
Oh, dang.
So I thought what we would do, I found three personal experiences from people on the tours, and I thought I would have Tracy read these.
Hmm.
So how about this?
Where's my specs? No, I'm just kidding. Okay, I leaned my shoulder into the wall. I heard Mike. My fiancé and I were there for the weekend and actually stayed in 419. We had no experiences in the room. However, on the 9:30 p.m. ghost tour, it was a different story. We were on the tour and had just made it down to the second floor and were walking up to Michael's room as the tour guide had just started telling the story. I was one of the last to meet the party, so I leaned up against the wall close to the door, and as soon as I leaned my shoulder into the wall, I heard Mike say out loud. It was said one time and in a male voice. I asked my fiancé if she had heard anything or said anything, as she was close to me. She had neither heard or said anything. No one else in the group knew who I was or my name, so they would have no reason to call out to me. I got goosebumps and started sweating and just felt weird right after that happened. We were talking about it coming home, and the same feelings hit all over again. Thank you for a great visit, Mike A. The second story says, strange experience in the morgue. My last experience was in the morgue at the very end of the tour, when the ghost tour guide was trying to contact a young man. I stood at the very edge of the freezer, and my friend stood right next to me with her back to an empty hall that we all had just came through. While the guide was trying to communicate, my friend whispered to me, asking if I had heard that. I turned to her to let her know that I only heard a child say something and I couldn't make it out. I then turned back around to listen to the guide. A few more minutes had passed when my friend asked me again if I could hear that. I asked her what she had heard, and she had stated that she was hearing breathing in her right ear between us. I bent a little and tried to listen, but heard nothing. So I just shook my head and turned back around. She then told me to hold my breath so she could listen, and I did so for about 20 seconds. After a few more moments had passed, she told me again, "You don't hear that?" This time, the look on her face was of horror, and her eyes were teary. I then shook my head, then turned back to listen to the guide. Suddenly, it felt as if someone took both their hands and slowly expanded their fingertips widely on the back of my head. I turned around, but nothing was there. Plus, my head was against the freezer, so no one could have done that. Yikes.
That's freaky.
It is freaky. The last one says, my legs went freezing cold. Kind of like mine are right now.
But you are sitting by the air conditioner.
I know. True story. Many people have experiences which are quite remarkable, and which they cannot explain, at the 1886 Crescent Hotel and Spa. The following was sent by Vivian Angel and her friends. They were on my ghost tour a few days ago. While sitting and waiting while you spoke about what will happen on the tour, my legs from mid-thigh down to my toes suddenly went freezing cold. I looked around for the air conditioning and noticed it was not blowing on me and the rest of my body was normal. I then looked at my friend and she said if I felt like the floor was shaking, and I told her that the whole hotel feels like it's shaking. It felt kind of like being on a ship of water. She then felt something brush against her leg and looked to see what it was, but nothing was there. So, dang. That's some scary stuff right there.
I think that's more what people experience more than anything. It's just that feeling.
Yeah.
And then nothing to experience it.
Man, I don't know what would be worse, having somebody whisper in your ear. I think that would creep me out the worst.
Women also, they like a guy to whisper in their ear.
Yeah, but romantical things. I'm like, I'm going to kill you.
That is romantic.
Oh.
For some people.
Well, I'm not into that, so. But that was cool that they shared their experiences. And I would love to read some more of those, because I'd like to see what everybody else had going on with them.
I think we shared enough stories from there.
No, that's true. That's true. I mean, on my personal time.
Yes, yeah, because that's what you're going to do. We've already established in this episode that you don't do that on your personal time.
No, that's true.
All right, so before we get out of here, a couple things. Once again, Potter and Love, August 10th to the 12th. It's going to be really cool. And if you go to the site, which you're, I'm going to play the at the end of the show. We're going to play the Potter and Love little commercial, so you got all the details there. But if you go and order tickets and put in Hillbilly, you'll save 10%.
That sounds good.
Phenomenal. And you can come
the
hang
more
out
the
with
merrier.
Us. Yep, you can come hang out with us. And did we? I don't know if we talked about the schedule. This is going to be so cool. So I'll mention again, the very first day at like 2 o'clock, I think is what it is. And if you go to the website, our whole schedule is up there so you can see what everybody does. Mm-hmm. All the podcasts are going to be there, what they're doing.
Yeah.
But I know we are on a panel for a paranormal panel. And I know, let's see who else is on that one. It's History Goes Bump is on there with us. And it's Haunted Visions.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it seems like there's another one. But it's at least us three. So it's just, apparently it's just the H's.
Well, all
horror
I know
stories,
is I
haunted
hope,
visions.
Yeah,
and,
that's very true. I didn't even think of that. I hope they don't ask me no hard questions or I'm going to be in trouble.
Yeah, no kidding.
You better be putting a wig up on you.
So that'd be a panel. And then that one. And then we've got a live show that we're doing on Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
And we've got, I get to introduce Astonishing Legends, which
nice.
Is a big thrill for me. And I believe that's Saturday night. And then we've got a Dark Myths panel that we're on that's got a bunch of people on it. So,
mm-hmm.
yeah, it's going to be really fun down there. So I'm excited about it.
I am too. I'm very excited.
And before we get out of here, I wanted to touch on one thing. At the very beginning of the show, we played, it's like a little commercial. It's a promo. But what it is, we've got a friend of ours who is involved with this new training videos. It's called Being with Infants. And I posted on our page before the link to be able to check this thing out. But we've actually got a friend of ours, another friend that actually uses this. And he swears by it. He's
mm-hmm.
like, and what it's for, in case you didn't get it or didn't listen all the way to the beginning, because some people fast forward to the beginning. But if you're a new parent or you're expecting or just have a newborn, and people always say, oh, there's no books to tell you how to raise kids, which there's books out there. It's like Dr. Spock's been around forever. But these are actual videos that teach you everything from like how to pick up a baby, how to support their head, how to lay them down, when to tell that they're ready to be weaned to table food. And it's all these things that sometimes you have parents teach you, sometimes you don't. But if you've got these questions that most parents have in the beginning stages, this thing tells you all kinds of stuff. And
yeah.
it walks you, it's like all the way through them getting ready to start school.
Mm-hmm.
This is, but you can get it, you can buy it video form and you can buy it on Amazon Prime and all that. So anyway, I just thought we'd help them out a little bit and throw them a bone. We're not getting any money off of it. We're just trying to help them out. And I thought it was a pretty damn cool idea.
Yeah, I wish that video was around when I was having kids.
Seriously. So I'll post a link to the site. And if you guys, it's something you're interested in, I know it would definitely help them out and it'd help you guys out too.
Yeah.
Thank you guys so much. And next week we're going to do the Snurl family haunting.
The Snurl?
S-N-U-R-L. Snurl.
Hmm. What a terrible name.
that could be the worst part of the story. Because they're stuck with that name.
Aww.
So we'll talk to you guys next week.
Thank you so much. Have a great week, guys. We love you.
Hi, I'm Dina Marie, the host of the Twisted Philly podcast, and I've got a question for you. Do you love podcasts? Because I sure do. And that's why the podcast community, Podcast We Listen To, is hosting their very first podcast convention for listeners. It's called Podern Love. The Podern Love convention is for listeners by listeners. It's for all of us, and it includes podcasts from every genre you could imagine, including comedy, movies and TV, pop culture, paranormal, history, health and fitness, true crime, and so many more. Our first convention is August 10th, 11th, and 12th, 2018, in one of the coolest cities in the country, New Orleans, Louisiana. And it's being held at the Intercontinental Hotel, which is a premier French Quarter hotel. The location is amazing. And the room rate can't be beat either. It's only $129 a night. Tickets are on sale on the website at www.podern.love. That's www.podern.love. There are over 40 independent podcasts already lined up to present at Podern Love, and we'll be adding more before the convention. Plus, featured podcasters have discount codes, so you can get a discount on your tickets. Be sure to follow Podern Love on Twitter and Facebook for the latest convention updates, news, information about new shows that are joining, and links to a dedicated website just for Pod and Love attendees to book their hotel room. We can't wait to see you this August in New Orleans.
Hey, Hillbillies, if you guys enjoy what we do here on the show every week and appreciate all the hard work we put into it, consider being one of our Patreon supporters. All you got to do is go to our website, hillbillyhorrorstories.com. Click on the tab for donations and you'll see the Patreon link right there. Click on it and you can go to our Patreon page. Then you will have a decision to make. You can choose the $1, the $3, the $5, or the $10 donation. Each one gets you different things a month, but regardless, you get some free stuff. Just check out the bonuses under each tier and you'll see what you get for free for that month, but you'll get something free regardless. Also, if you'd like to buy any Hillbilly Horror Story merch, you're also in the right place on the website, hillbillyhorrorstories.com. Just click on the store page and see whatever it is that you like. Click on a few links, send a little bit of money, and your item will be on its way. Thank you guys so much for all of your support. We love you, we thank you, and we appreciate you.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.